We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's not officially the weekend until that song plays. Did I hear correctly that Brad Young last week said he doesn't like playing this song? What? What? Who doesn't like this masterpiece? Masterpiece. Welcome back to Overnight America. The phone lines, we keep them flexible for you. That's what a Friday morning's all about. Randy, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Good.
Well, you know, I'm from Louisiana, and I have a very high-stress job. And I just want to tell you, you know, I don't get to listen to you till at about 11:30 at night, and you get me home every night.
Mm.
And I used to listen to Tucker Carlson and, you know, Fox News all the way home, but, man, I have to tell you, you outdo them.
Wow.
You're refreshing. I'm not kidding you. You make me want to – I told my wife – we're going to go to St. Louis in June or July just to visit. We've never been there. So,
great.
Really, you tell it like people need to come to St. Louis and then visit this place. And
well,
it's
nice.
Refreshing.
Well, what kind of things are you into? What kind of things you like to do?
Well, 8 o'clock in the morning, I have a furniture company.
Okay.
I start building furniture at 8 in the morning till about noon, and then I work for hospice.
Oh, wow.
And then I travel. I get home about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
So, what I meant was, so you work two jobs, man. You must work so many. How many hours a week are you putting in?
Oh, I work 6 days a week.
Yeah. All right. So, what kind of things do you like to do for fun? So, if you were to come to St. Louis, what were those things you'd look for?
I don't know. I work all the time. So, I mean, I really dedicate all my time to people.
Yeah.
So, that's about it. I build a kitchen table and chairs for a fortunate family every year for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I give it away.
Wow.
I don't charge for it. So,
you know, there's a lot to do in St. Louis that are very popular attractions here. That in the nice thing about St. Louis is they have some things through an art foundation that are free. So the art museum's free, the science center's free, the zoo's free. So you can get into all of those attractions, and they're all right in the same place. So Forest Park's a great destination for that sort of thing. There's so many different things to do every weekend. There's one thing that happens right around that time, the balloon glow. If you get an opportunity to come to St. Louis around that time, it's one of those events where they have all the hot air balloons. They glow and they do all the really cool show for that one night. That's worth looking into. There's so many things, Randy. Depending on when you come in, I'm sure you'll find some great things.
Okay.
I don't
all
know.
All right, ma'am.
There's a lot that goes on. Well, I'm so happy you called, and, man, you just brightened this hour up, giving me a compliment or two. That was nice of you.
Man, you are a great guy. I mean, you are good. I'm not kidding you.
Mm. So you said Louisiana?
Louisiana, oh, yeah.
What's the temperature like down there?
I've got shorts on and a T-shirt.
Shorts and a T-shirt. Oh, man.
It was 70 degrees today.
No, not bad. That's actually perfect. Can't ask for more.
All right. We're getting ready for Mardi Gras.
Mm. All right, Randy. Be careful. Be safe. Thank you for checking in, all right? And if you do come to St. Louis, you better check in with us. Let us know before you come out.
All right, brother. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
All right, man. All right.
Wow, that was kind of cool. I like that sort of thing. I would say this week, there have been multiple compliments this week. It's weird to get compliments about the radio program. It's okay. So let me kind of give you an idea of what it's like here at KMOX late night hours. I get here and the main staff is gone. So there are still people in the newsroom working. So depending on who that might be, there's maybe a news person around, sometimes two. If you go down the hallways to the other radio stations, they're really not staffed at that point. They're pretty much gone for the night. The sales staff is gone. The place is quiet. The custodial staff is cleaning and doing their thing. But, you know, as they get to certain areas, they start turning the lights off. And I'm working alone. I sit in front of my computer. I get prepared for the show. And I do everything I need to do. And I try to find as many interesting things to talk about that I can possibly find. And it's very difficult to do a four-hour radio program five nights a week when you're doing all this stuff and it's just you. When I get into this radio booth, I'm alone. So outside of the 10 o'clock newscast, there's glass that's separating me from a producer, and that's it. I don't see anyone else in the building between that time. And sometimes you wonder, you sit in this studio and you wonder, I know there's people listening, but are they really? It just feels like, it just feels so lonely. It's so hard to explain. Even though you know you're not, it just feels that way. And I know there's a lot of people that are the same exact way. It's 1:11 a.m. here in St. Louis, 2:11 on the East Coast time. And I know there's people in homes and they're alone too. You know, sometimes they're just living alone or for whatever circumstance their wife or husband may be sleeping, so they might be the only person up in the house. They might be driving, coming back from work. They might be still working through the overnight, driving truck or whatever it may be. They may have the late night shift at a bakery. There might be a police officer. It doesn't matter. You know, I know there's a lot of people out there, and I know that there's people that Randy that just called in and said, you know, I really appreciate you for doing what you're doing, but really it's the other way around. I really appreciate you for you doing what you're doing, and, you know, it's quite an honor that you would decide to listen to us here. It really is. Even down in Louisiana on 11:20 a.m., it's a beautiful signal, isn't it? I got a couple of other stories I want to get to this hour, but if there was anyone else that wanted to bring something up, we save the Friday mornings to keep the lines more open. 314-436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120 on Overnight America, KMOX.
News at the top of every hour. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather.
I got two space stories for you. All right. This is actually a really cool space thing. Well, it's not space necessarily. Well, actually, I got one bad. I just read this headline. I didn't actually read the article yet, but a couple of days ago, I mentioned how the rover that China put on the far side of the moon tried to sprout cotton and potatoes and things. They're just trying to experiment to see what would happen. Well, there was a sprout, but it died. That's kind of sad. Aw. So there's a follow-up there. But there's an article of, well, it's not necessarily an article. It's more or less people chatting online. And they came up with what may be one of the great reality show ideas of our time. Not only would I watch this, I would watch it, and then I would make sure everyone else watched it. The premise of this reality show sounds amazing. Here's the premise. You ready? There should be a reality show where flat earthers have to find the edge of the world. I would so watch that. We've had flat earth people onto this radio program. Very respectful to them, of course. You know, I don't buy into the flat earth society, but there's a group of people that do. And they're very specialized in the way they compromise some of the way science and their beliefs have to work in order to make all of these things consolidate into a one giant conspiracy belief or whatever it may be. So if they had a major network that were to grab people that were honestly believing that the Earth was flat and there's a giant wall of ice that they call Antarctica that surrounded this entire plate that they call Earth, and they were to have everything fully funded, all the resources they need to get to that edge in order to prove that the Earth is flat, that would be really fascinating to me to see how many of the people would change their minds after given all the resources they say they don't have in order to prove the world wrong about their philosophies, that once it's presented in front of them and they still can't prove this sort of thing, and maybe this could be something that changes their perceptions of how the world works, that would be cool. Would they ever do something like this? I don't know. But man, I hope they do. Really, they say it's like the Amazing Race. It's kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos in a way, because, you know, you'd see them struggle to try to figure out why none of their instruments are confirming their beliefs. So that, of course, they won't find an edge, but what they will find maybe is a new understanding, and maybe they'll find each other. Aww. So it says many flat earthers believe the reason water from the oceans don't spill off the earth is because there's an enormous ice wall holding everything in. That's the reason why, too, you can't actually fall off the earth. And that's the reason why everything's trapped inside. The one we talked to, I haven't had her on in a while. Maybe I can reach out to her and see if she wants to come back on. But it's still one of our most downloaded podcasts of all time. It's our interview with Stacy McFlat Earth, I think is the name she gave herself. She also believes there's some sort of dome that is over the planet, which prevents anyone from actually leaving, so they can't get up to space. You know, they believe that the sun is just, you know, thousands of miles away as opposed to, you know, millions or billions of miles away. They believe that it's all projected onto the earth, so, you know, there's no rotation whatsoever. It's like the earth doesn't revolve around the sun, so the sun is never really behind, and, you know, it's just a projection, so it's almost like a giant TV screen up in the sky that projects certain things, let it be the day or night or the stars or sunspots, anything like that. And there's some really weird, bizarre philosophies that they buy into. And, you know, I will say that I think one day that they'll wake up to it and realize that, no, none of this, wait a minute, none of this really makes sense. Now, a show like this may be actually helping people. Now, if they were to produce a show like this, and it shows some people that were diehard Flat Earth Society people come to their senses or come to reality and understand all of these things to be true, maybe that would help the people watching it that are part of that society. It's kind of like the same thing as the Scientology deal, where they had that Going Clear special on HBO. They did the documentary on it. The one actress that was part of King of Queens, I can't remember, is it Lee Remy? Ramey? But she also did a series on one of the cable shows where she talks about her experience in the Church of Scientology, how she got out of it, how she was treated inside of it, things like that. That could be one of those moments where people start to see some of the insides of what's going on and maybe start to change some of the minds of the people that are in there. You know, there's another somewhat space story. This is kind of UFO-y. Ooh. Back on December 10th in Evansville, Indiana. That's really close to here. You know, it's one of those weird map deals when you say Evansville, that it's actually, if you were to just look at a map, it's south of where St. Louis is, if you were to just draw a straight line. It's weird to think that, because that's Indiana. And you would think of Indiana as, you know, north and east of Missouri, but really it's just flat east, and actually dips of Indiana, the very southwest corner of it actually goes farther south than where on the map St. Louis sits. But the war zone wanted to confirm some of these weird things that people are starting to see. So people were looking online. There was these mysterious radar blips that were showing up in southern Illinois and western Kentucky. National Weather Service said it kind of looked like storms on the radar, but it wasn't. It wasn't raining. So how in the world do they have all these storms listed on the radar? And you go outside and you look up and there's no rain, no storms, none of those things. So Warzone, which is a blog, eventually confirmed that the anomalies arose from C-130 training to West Virginia from military exercises that were going out. And these were huge plumes of military chaff, which is radar jammy material that they put out, some advanced radar jammy material. So what the radar people were seeing is, you know, there's no storms here, but they must have been dumping a ton of stuff up in the sky for these large storm-like clouds to be around, streaking across. According to Warzone, one of the main Air National Guard flying units didn't have any of the planes equipped to release that sort of thing. So that's where the conspiracy rolls in. Could it be possible that This is a cover-up for alien life. Ooh. The same day, a strange radar shape reported in the Florida Keys. So they're starting to see those same things, too. And they have these screenshots saved. I mean, they can go back and look at the history of it all. I mean, it's not like these things weren't showing up on the radar. They were actually showing up. What they're saying is that the explanation given by the government is not satisfactory to them. They're saying, hey, they couldn't have put this stuff up there. This plane wasn't equipped to put it up there. So that's kind of a bogus explanation. So what are you hiding from us? I always like the type of stories of what are you hiding from us? So the chaff, and all these instruments were caused by chaff. They say what kind, nationwide exercises with the military conducting. And why were they radar jamming to begin with over American soil? What would be the point of doing something like that? People with the Mutual UFO Network, I think they call that MUFON, said in an email that the blips appeared over Illinois and Kentucky, and they believe that the facts don't add up, and this could be a documented case of UFOs coming through and the government trying to hide it. I would love to learn if there was any merit to some of these things. There is a show, is it on the History Channel that they put together, dating back to the 60s, where they took some of the documents that were classified at some point, but when the United States government started to investigate some of these sightings, you know, it was documented, either classified or unclassified, whatever, and just kind of stored for a long time. But now some of these documents are starting to be unclassified, and they're dramatizing it into a television show. It looks awesome. I haven't seen an episode yet, but I definitely want to check it out. Let's see. What else do I got? I got a whole stack of things here. How about this story? This is from CBS News. Did you know the bubonic plague was still around? So apparently the third cat in Wyoming now just diagnosed with the bubonic plague. The cat has tested positive, state's Department of Health reports. I don't know if you know this, but every year there are Americans that are diagnosed with the bubonic plague. Just a, you know, handful. I think it's under 10 a year, given that we have about 330 million people or something like that, 320 million people in the United States. If 8 people come down with the bubonic plague, they do say that normally you just take an antibiotic pill and it treats it. So as long as you catch it early enough. But here's what they say. So the Wyoming Department of Health recommends the following precautions to help prevent plague infections. The plague. Use insect repellent on boots and pants when in areas might have fleas. Use flea repellent on pets to properly dispose of rodents that may be on the property. Avoid unnecessary exposure to rodents and avoid contact with their carcasses. And avoid areas with unexplained rodent die-off. So if you got a bunch of like dead rats hanging out and you don't know what happened to them, you're in Wyoming, I'd be a little careful because they might be plague-ridden right now. The disease can be passed from humans to from ill animals by the fleas that are on their bodies. But again, if you catch it early enough, you should be fine. Symptoms include fever, swollen and tender lymph nodes or lymph glands, extreme exhaustion, headaches, chills, coughing, difficulty breathing, abdominal pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. Sounds terrible, but treated if caught early with antibiotics. How about that? 2019, bubonic plague is still a thing. All right, so coming up, I wanted to do an interview with Dr. Warren Farrell. He has a book called The Boy Crisis. When Gillette came out with their ad a couple of days ago, their internet ad or whatever it was, toxic masculinity, a lot of people just rolled their eyes at it and said, you know, this is just ridiculous. I think Pierce Morgan, who does Good Morning Britain, he had a show here on, was it CNN for a while? I think he was the heir apparent to Larry King. Really never picked up. He just didn't have what it takes. He was part of a reality show. I think he was on one of those, you know, America's Got Talent, but Britain's Got Talent or something like that. But he is like right on top of this when it comes to the whole Gillette thing. So the other day on his show, let me point out what he said. Like here, how about this?
It's utter guff.
What? Implication. What's guff about it?
Here's what's guff about it. The implication from that commercial now is that basically most men are pretty toxic. Awful people. We're toxic.
Why is that?
We're overly thing? Masculine,
all
right?
All men intervening and cooperating and being diplomatic.
Yeah, the implication being most men are horrible little bullies.
We're men.
Sexual harassers, abusers, etc., etc. And we all have to be saved from ourselves. We're all dreadful people.
We all have to be saved from ourselves. And you know what? Who's there to save us? Thank goodness, a major corporation that's trying to sell us garbage. So Pierce Morgan, right on.
The virtue signaling nonsense contained in it. The implication that somehow we all have something to apologize for. Shut up, Gillette.
As if we all have something to apologize for. Way to go, Piers Morgan. So we had on our show not that long ago, Dr. Warren Farrell, who came out with a book called The Boy Crisis. And I wanted to ask him, you know, is this Gillette ad actually harmful to the cause of when you're trying to raise boys to be men? We're going to talk to him about that coming up on Overnight America KMOX.
Now, more of Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX.
Joining us now is the author of The Boy Crisis, Why Our Boys Are Struggling and What We Can Do About It, Dr. Warren Farrell. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
I look forward to talking with you again.
So the Gillette ad that everyone's talking about, they put on an online video. It shows toxic masculinity, and they use a couple of examples. My first impressions of the video was they're really mixing the streams here. They're showing some things that are considered creepy behavior, and then they're showing some things that I think are pretty normal behaviors, and they're trying to put some stigma to, you know, the boys wrestling in the yard or something like that. And I remember our last conversation. One of the things you told me that I've never forgotten and I've shared with a lot of other people was the learning lesson that boys have with their fathers, roughhousing. They learn empathy. They learn when to stop. It's something that they don't get from mothers. And I thought, you know what? There's probably life lessons that are being learned that people that may be highly progressive look at that and say that's toxic. And that's the wrong approach, I think, we're taking with some of our boys. So I wanted to get your thought on that and how that ties into the Gillette ad.
Yes, the Gillette ad, I think, is, you know, the end is that they say that they want, you know, men to be better. And, of course, there's nobody that would argue with that portion of the ad. But you can you imagine, let's say, having a Revlon ad with and saying and starting out with trying to the end goal being to say we want women to be better, but starting out the ad saying, you know, look at how we're Revlon and look at how manipulative using makeup is. It is an example of women's manipulativeness, and then going on to two or three and look at how when women do things like get divorced, they oftentimes don't want the father involved when the father should be involved. And they started out with all the negatives of some aspects of femininity, and then they said, we want women to be better. So people would be outraged by it, and that's basically what Gillette did. If you want men to be better, and we all want everybody to be better, you don't start out by just tearing men apart and having no acknowledgement of what boys and men, well, not boys, but what men have done for the culture. We would all be speaking, we'd all be Nazis speaking German if thousands and thousands of our fathers and grandfathers hadn't died, being willing to protect us from such an outcome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our schools and our homes and our bridges and our sewer systems, they're all built by men. And men do all the toxic, dirty jobs. And there has not been in the American Psychological Association critique of masculinity, the hashtag MeToo movement, or in Gillette, there's been no acknowledgement of what men have done to protect, to serve, to love their families by producing more money. That feminism has turned on its head and said, oh, men produce more money than women do. That's a result of male privilege and male power. No, actually, it's a result of dad's obligations and responsibilities to earn more money once there's children and give up jobs that they love doing, maybe like being a musician, an artist, or a writer, or being a teacher in school, and realize that teaching didn't make enough money, so you become a principal. Well, that additional money that comes from being a principal is him giving up his passion to make sure his children have opportunities that are better than his. And it's not the result of male privilege and male power. So all of this has been missed by the Gillette ad, hashtag MeToo, and the American Psychological Association.
How much did, like when I was watching and I thought, okay, great. So next thing you know, if I'm going to be out in the backyard barbecuing a steak or a burger or a brat or whatever it is, I'm going to look over and the neighbors are going to be shaking their heads like, look at this, just portraying a stereotype of masculinity out there barbecuing. And I thought, it has nothing to do with that. So they put these ads out. They get a lot of publicity. I think something like this could actually be damaging because it takes some people that look at some of these extreme views of like barbecuing as toxic masculinity, and then they try to move the bar a little bit further because when they start the discussion next time, they'll just say, oh, it's already a given. Gillette already set that up as a given. All of this is toxic. So what's the next thing we're going to go towards? And they keep trying to move down the line. And ultimately, I think that hurts the growth of kids if we just try to take out some of these experiences and things that go on inside of a normal family.
Absolutely. You and I know that you were mentioning the roughhousing, and I was mentioning for people who didn't listen to the last program we did on roughhousing, roughhousing is a really good example of that. And we were talking about how, you know, before I did the research for the boy crisis, I would not have thought that roughhousing was associated with empathy, or that roughhousing was associated with the ability of a boy to make a decision, to understand the difference between when he's being assertive versus when he's being aggressive. Mm-hmm. We talked about how, in fact, when boys and fathers and girls and fathers, when they all wrestle, if the father throws the three kids on the couch, and I was mentioning last time we talked about how this was, you know, the mother usually looks over and feels, oh my God, I have just one more child to monitor here, and she's feeling fear, you know, she wants to be not controlling, so she sort of backs off and doesn't sort of like say anything, but she's saying in her mind's eye that sooner or later this is going to end up with somebody crying or somebody hurting, one of the kids getting hurt, and sure enough that happens. And so from her perspective, that seems really all bad and unprotective, and that she does in fact have one more child to monitor, and she especially feels that way when the father goes back and says, okay, we'll try it, here's what you shouldn't do. You shouldn't put your elbow in your sister's face, and you shouldn't, push your younger brother around like that. But if you do that anymore, there won't be any more roughhousing. Mm-hmm. And so mom goes, what? You're gonna let them roughhouse again, even after they did, it had an accident? But it's that reinserting the roughhousing after saying, if you do that again, there'll be no more roughhousing. Right. That gives the children the chance to correct their behavior and to realize that thinking about their sisters and brothers' needs and empathizing with the fact that they don't want to be, have an elbow in their eye, that is helping and knowing that they'll lose something if they don't. And I was sharing with you that, when a mom just repeats it, the child holds up the excitement of shoving brother or sister aside versus having the downside of a mom repeating the warning, and clearly the upside of just continuing to roughhouse in a more aggressive way is better than the downside of having mom repeat her command. But losing the roughhousing and not for the evening, that competes effectively with being greedy and selfish and aggressive, but dads don't read about these things in either the Boy Crisis or any parenting magazine. One of the reasons the nine different styles of parenting, between dad style parenting and mom style parenting, that I brought into the Boy Crisis was I couldn't find these descriptions and these understandings in any of the parenting magazines I went through. Mm-hmm. And so painting masculinity as toxic without even knowing what dads contribute and not understanding that when dads help kids push to their edge and try something harder after they fall down and go into the woods and don't guide them every step of the way, but give them an opportunity to be a little bit lost, but yet know exactly what the parameters are so that they don't get too lost, and let the child climb the tree, but not without being there to protect the child from falling, but letting the child take risks that might lead to a fall and maybe lead to, at worst, a broken arm, but without without making it too dangerous. Yeah. This is one of the purposes of fathering.
Yeah. You're author of the book, The Boy Crisis, Why Our Boys Are Struggling and What We Can Do About It, Dr. Warren Farrell. And I wanted to set aside the merit of the message because, you can look at some of that and say, yeah, it's probably good not to be a creep and to teach your kids not to be creepy and whatever. But I think you also have to take into consideration the source of the message. And I wanted to ask you what you think the harm is when families and fathers and mothers take their cues from the corporations market campaign, and then they just set aside traditional family values and say those things aren't important. We better listen to what this corporation tells us to do.
Whenever you set a, what is so crucial, the dad, the boy crisis resides where fathers do not reside. Anytime there is any message from any source that is suggesting that fathers aren't important or that the intact family isn't important, you can have an argument as to whether you need to be married or not and live together. But you can't have an argument about whether marriage is important to keep the family together, because we now have hard data to show us that when children are born into a married family, they do much better because, in part, because the father is far more likely to remain with the children. The average father brought where the child is born into a non-intact family, even when the mother and father are living together at the point of the birth, the average father only lasts between 3.5 to 4 years of consistent contact with the child. That's what we have to understand about one of the positive purposes of the intact family that no liberal or philosophy or corporation or message of any type can leave behind. Mm.
Dr. Warren Farrell, if people want to check out your book, The Boy Crisis, or more of the work you're doing, where can they find you?
Yes, on probably the for The Boy Crisis, it's on sale today on Amazon. So The Boy Crisis and Warren Farrell, or just The Boy Crisis, will get you there. My website is warrenfarrell.com, or if you want to go directly to more information about The Boy Crisis, that's just do theboycrisis.org. Mm-hmm.
And you can get all the hookup information from there. I think it brings up some good points. We see these things pop up every once in a while. And luckily, a lot of people are rejecting this and looking at it and saying they're bringing up a lot of silly points. And luckily, the rejection, I think, is widely felt on an ad like this. There are a lot of people that are looking at this as in it's going to be the gold standard when it comes to corporate messages anymore. But by a wide majority of the people I've talked to, I think they're able to look at this and see through it. So thank you for joining us here, Dr. Warren Farrell, The Boy Crisis, the book out now. Thanks for coming on to KMOX.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric Guest Line. Whew, late nights. All right. Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX.
Overnight America, having some fun, at least for another, 7 minutes or so, while we're here with you until CBS News at the top of the hour. You know, Kevin Kleen did another great, whole nother story. Oh, I love Kevin Kleen stuff. Maybe we should play that, might as well. You know, it's a Friday morning, getting into the weekend mode. I'm already starting to unbutton some of the top ones on the shirt, getting things a little bit looser, relaxing. Another great whole nother story from Kevin Kleen.
It's one of many statues on the outside of the building at St. Francis Xavier College Church at Lindell and Grand. As some passersby agreed, it's hard to know who the saint is because of the face.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Seems like it's like it has like a bag over its head or something like that. Just like a weird blank circular head.
There's no eyes?
No eyes.
There's maybe a little nose, but it just looks like it's indistinct.
Right, right. The other statues are actual details.
I mean, they look like Michelangelo carved them this morning. They're so distinct.
Right, like they touch them up on a daily except for that one.
So I went inside the church office, the St. Francis Xavier College Church office, to find out if anybody there knew about what happened to the unknown saint.
Mike Williams.
Mike Williams is the maintenance supervisor at the church. He's worked there for 26 years. What does he remember happened to that statue?
Just weather and pollution, and you know, it's just right at the corner, you know, in the front of the church, and it just seems that it's...
It took a hit.
Yeah. We actually, the head came off of it at one point.
And, what happened?
Well, they were trying to seal it, and when they touched the head, it just popped right off, and they had to epoxy it back on.
Fall to the sidewalk?
No, the guy was able to catch it. This was many years ago, and the guy was on a ladder that we were just trying to spray him with some kind of sealer to try and preserve them as much as we could at that point. He put some cement over to try and give it a little bit of a face, and he just kind of poked a couple eyes and a smiley face.
So it's had a facelift.
Yes, yes it has.
Well, what does this say about life?
You're the unlucky one sometimes.
William says there's been some talk about replacing the statue someday, but first they have to figure out who it is. It might be the church's namesake, St. Francis Xavier. With a whole other story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Oh, that's a good one. Way to go, Kevin. I love that he finds those stories to share. There's so many great ones around here. You can pass by that statue and never think twice about it. And then there's a bright mind like Kevin Killeen that would see that same thing and say, there's a story behind that, I'm sure. Yesterday, I played this interview, and I didn't get a chance to replay it. I might as well do it right now because we've got just a couple of minutes here. I interviewed Clint Hosse. He's a local musician. He's someone that used to work here at KMOX for a pretty good period amount of time through the 90s. Now works at one of the television stations in town. But I wanted to ask him because he was here right at the tail end of the careers of Jack Buck and Jim White. And I knew he had some stories. And I said, I want to talk to you about him. I'm going to have a fascination of learning about Jim White. Clint Hosse, it just happened to have you in studio. I wanted to talk to you about Jim White because you worked with him for, let's see, so 93 till 99 when he retired, several years. What was it like working with him?
Well, the persona that he projected on air was sometimes, people might think he was a jerk or abrupt or whatever. And some people
good night.
Yeah. I mean, it was comical to most people. And so I never knew what he would really be like when I first met him, and I was a little bit cautious. But Jim White in person was like a teddy bear.
Yeah. I mean,
just the nicest guy, and I always enjoyed Tom Langmire and I, the former program director and general manager. We'd go to lunch with Jim every so often. I went on appointments with Jim. He'd make himself available for that.
Did you go to the Concord Grill?
We went to the Concord Grill.
Yeah. That was his place, I understand.
Yeah, he liked that. We would go, sometimes we'd go to Tucker's over in Soulard because it was just close. But I really enjoyed my relationship with Jim White. I mean, just an amazing broadcaster and great human being.
Would you actually see him at the station during daylight hours, or was he just someone that would come in for special occasions?
My recollection is that he just came in for special occasions.
Yeah.
I mean, the times that we would go to lunch, he was probably here for some other reason, and then we'd grab lunch afterwards.
Yeah. You worked with a lot of different personalities at KMOX. You were, let's see, so Charlie Brennan would have been here before you. He was here late 80s when he started.
That's right.
But he was still pretty young member of the KMOX staff at that point.
Yes.
Did you ever work with Charlie directly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Many times.
What kind of things would you do?
Well, we did a lot of live endorsement type campaigns together, and Charlie would accompany me on some appointments where necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we had a great time. I'm a big fan.
What would an endorsement rate look like in 93? Was it for KMOX and radio in general in the 90s was like about to hit its peak. And then in the 2000s, it starts to decline. So in the 90s, I've heard some unbelievable stories about ad rates and endorsement rates and things like that. That must have been a booming time to work for KMOX.
Yeah, it was. And, if with regard to specific rates, I mean, my recollection is Charlie Brennan was, $350 a commercial.
Yeah, that's great.
it was we didn't really do much of that in the morning and morning drive.
Was it the morning meeting or what was it called?
It was the morning meeting.
Yeah.
And you know the origin of that, right?
No.
In the One Memorial Drive building, because I didn't know this either. And I would say, why is the show called the morning meeting? And that's because Mr. Hyland would have a meeting every morning in the conference room on the third floor, and it was referred to as the morning meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So Charlie Brennan and Kevin Horrigan kind of named their show after that. You have to ask Charlie the exact specifics on it, but that was what I was always told. I hope that's accurate.
Yeah. Did you ever listen to Jim White on the radio before you started working here?
Oh, yeah.
He was the thing late night, wasn't he?
He was, and it was so casual. I mean, like, and Ryan, you have this quality too,
mm-hmm.
Where it's just a normal conversation.
Yeah.
And you're just having some fun. And, you know, Jim White would have the lady that would call in and play the piano. And Jack Buck had that, too. I used to love it when Jack Buck would fill in for Jack Carney.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be humming a tune. And it was just, you're a radio companion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Jim White was.
Yeah. He had something special there.
Yeah, and you just keeping people company and being their friend, and it was fun.
30 years doing that. In radio, that is a rarity, to find someone to work at a station, let alone 10 years or 5 years even more. Man, you even look at some of the turnover that happens in television with news anchors, and sometimes it's hard to keep up because you'll see someone, and the next week it's someone different. Same thing with radio stations. You'll hear someone, it's someone different. It's so rare. You look at the longevity of people have here at KMOX. It's unbelievable. Like even our former executive producer, Peggy Cohill,
right.
She was here 30-some years before she just retired last year. You know, I'm sure you worked with Peggy and all them. That is unbelievable. You just don't see it. What a rarity to have a KMOX like that.
All right, that was just part of our conversation with Clint Hosse. Some memories from KMOX. I profiled him. That'll air sometime in a few weeks from now. But he's going to be filling in and doing a show on Thursday next week. Really looking forward to hearing that. This is Overnight America.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.